From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, our number is 800-462-7413. And along with your calls, we have some topics to talk about. Tell us, Zorba.
Yes, we're going to talk about the right way to fall versus the wrong way to fall, something that stuntmen and soccer players know how to do, but something that adults, especially seniors, do not.
And
we're going to talk about a rise sharp in older Americans using multiple psychiatric medications. What's safe? What's not? How does it affect you and your health?
You're aiming these topics at me?
I'm looking right
old
at you.
People topics?
Well, falling is not just old. Falling is, and psychiatric medicines are not just old. Come on.
What's our recipe?
Well, we've got a guest chef. It's wonderful. It's Chef Ronaldo Linares. He's the executive chef at Martino's Cuban Restaurant in Somerville, New Jersey. He's got a great book, which is Sabores de Cuba. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. I'm trying to. But diabetes-friendly traditional and nouveau Cubano cuisine. Great cookbook. We've got a great recipe for you. It's green vegetable egg tortilla. You're going to love it.
Mm-mm-mm. Again, our number is 800-462-7413. To the phones now, Zorba, as we welcome a listener in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi.
Hi. Listen, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, I'm a parent of an autistic child, and he's 13 years old, and he has some high anxiety issues and anger issues. And there's a new treatment out now called, the initials are EMDR, which stands mm-hmm. for Eye Movement Desensitization Reprocessing.
Mm-hmm.
The kids call it buzzies.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that you can wear on your wrist, and they have vibrations, and they alternate the vibrations from wrist to wrist.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also, you can listen to it. I think it's sort of like a self-meditation type
right.
of thing for kids.
Right.
And I just want to know what your thoughts are on that. And as a second question, if you have time, what about this micro doses of LSD and the small doses of marijuana and also an antibiotics to treat anxiety?
Uh-huh. Well, a couple of things. First of all, I've heard of this. I've heard of a number of feedback loops that have been useful for kids and even for adults as kids become adults and they become older in terms of desensitization. And I think they're dynamite. I mean, it's a non-pharmacological way to work to desensitize and get, you know, reduce anxiety. And it's very interesting. I was thinking about this the other day. I was thinking about it when I was on the ski hill. So I'm on the ski hill, looking down the ski hill. It's a very steep hill, but at the beginning of the hill, it's actually not as steep as at the end of the hill. And so I'm going down the hill, and I'm kind of anxious because I'm an intermediate skier, and I do some blacks. And I'm finally relaxed three-quarters of the way down the hill, and I got to the bottom of the hill without any problem. The steepest part was the bottom of the hill, not the top of the hill. And if the top of the hill was the steepest part, I would have said, oh, I can't do it, I can't do it, I can't do it. But because I was at the bottom of the hill and I had already done some hill, I didn't really think much about it. And I think part of the feedback loop with autism is the anxiety associated with it is I can't do things, and this gives you feedback.
Well, how does putting something on your wrist?
Well, visually, we get feedback all the time when we're looking at things. I mean, if you're on a boat and you're nauseous, you look at the horizon, you get feedback from your eyes, you often don't get as nauseous. You know, if you're on a bicycle and you have one hand and you go, I feel like I'm turning a little bit, I'm going to fall, you put your other hand on the other side. It doesn't just change what you're doing, but you get feedback that you're in more control. And with these feedback loops, kids become anxious. I've heard about this. And then it gives you vibration or oral feedback, which may then be self-meditation. So I have a question. For you, do you wear a Fitbit or one of the other devices that give you feedback?
No, but we're thinking about getting them.
You're thinking about getting them? Why? Why are you thinking about getting them?
Well, I would get it, because his behavior is kind of it's a huge ripple down effect to the whole family.
Right.
And we have anxiety
right.
and stress, and it's just a huge challenge.
Right. Right. So getting feedback that sort of, that begins to relax the system, then relaxes the system. In other words, when you know that you have something that may relax your son, your child, then you become more relaxed, and that actually relaxes your child. And it's a very, just like people can become anxious about things. Now, whether or not LSD and marijuana have an effect. That's kind of interesting. I don't know the answer to that. LSD, marijuana, psilocybin, mescaline. The federal government has said these are drugs that you're not allowed to test. That's basically what they've done. They put up enough hoops so there can be no scientific testing of significance. In other words, I can test an opioid, and we have 53,000 people last year, roughly, who died of narcotics and benzodiazepines in the country. Huge number of people. I can test those willy-nilly if I want to. If I want to do a test on those dangerous drugs that are useful, I can do it. But the feds say, no, 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 no. LSD, marijuana. I mean, marijuana? Come on. You know, you're not allowed to test these. So we don't have any information on them. And until the federal government gets their head out of the sand and allows us to do more testing, we're not going to know. So I don't have the answer to that. I certainly would not put my child on any hallucinogenic drug without good scientific evidence, and there is none, that it's going to do anything. So I wouldn't touch that. And and there's a lots of, you know, there's a lots of noise in the Twitter universe about it, but it's noise.
Okay.
Good luck to you and your family, and keeping that family together, you know, on the bright side of things is is always the challenge. So.
All right, appreciate it.
Take care. Thanks for your call.
Thanks.
Yeah, at 800-462-7413.
You know, the issue with such difficult things, and I think a good thing about our show is that other people who have problems that are similar can then get some feedback and know that they're not alone, and that's just always important whenever you're dealing with a child that then has challenges.
Yeah, that is right. Again, 800-462-7413. And speaking of right, you're going to talk some, Zorba, about the right way to fall.
That's right. There's a right way to fall and a wrong way to fall. And the wrong way to fall is when you're falling to put out your hand and your arm to try to protect your fall, because you will break your wrist when you try to do that, especially on the ice. I cannot tell you how many collies fractures, that was a common fracture, I've had to set over my lifetime for people who did that. Or falling directly on your knee, you may break your kneecap in the same thing. And this is a very, very interesting thing. There's a right way and a wrong way. So the first thing you want to do, and it's interesting because when I was an adult, I'm in Chicago, I'm first starting out, I'm working in the ER in Chicago, and I decided I really wanted to learn to skate better. I had skated a little bit. I went, took some lessons, and the first thing they taught you was how to fall on the ice. And I remember thinking, I don't want to do this. And the guy said, well, everyone has to do it. So we all went out. There were 10 of us on the ice, and he showed us the right way to fall. And it was like, no problem. I mean, it hurt a little bit, but we wanted to know. He wanted to make sure we knew how to fall. So the way to fall are two things. Number one, you want to protect your head. Your head is one of the most, if not, I would probably call it the most important organ in your body. And so you want to tuck in your head. If you're falling, the first thing you want to do is tuck in your head. You might even put your hands on top of your head. Pull it in, because your head is what you want to do. The second thing you want to do is shift and roll over so the meatiest part of your body hits the ground. What is the meatiest part of your body? Your buttocks and your legs. Mm-hmm. So you want your buttocks and your legs, which are not in front of you. Your butt is in back of you. Because if you fall backwards completely, you might fall on your butt, but you're going to fall on your head. If you fall frontwards completely, you might, you know, hurt your wrist and you might hurt your knees. Mm-hmm. So the answer is you want to tuck and turn. So if you find yourself falling, put your hands in your head, pull your body in as close as you can, so that basically what you're going to do is you're going to fall on your buttock if you can, the meatiest part of your leg, and if not, you're going to be on your arm and your shoulder. That's the best chance that you're not going to either hit your wrist, your hand, your elbow, or your kneecap. And it's something really paratroopers do. If you think of yourself as a paratrooper and you're falling. But when I read, and I got the idea for this from a New York Times article where they really talked about it, I thought about the fact that we don't fall enough as adults. Now, I'm not recommending we do, but, you know, if I look at my granddaughter, who is 1.5, she falls all the time. If I think about my kids who played soccer, they all played soccer. They fell all the time. I mean, they never put their arm out when they fell. They kind of were soccer players, so they kicked something and they fell.
Yeah.
And, you know, they rarely had injuries. And, you know, the injuries to the number of falls were minimal. And if you look at it, it's like if you look at emergency room visits, it is one of the major causes of a visit to the emergency room. So think about falling. You know, you don't want want to fall, but just kind of think about it. So if it occurs, and generally it occurs for all of us once a year, once every 2 years, yeah, or whatever, yeah, you know, you'll go, oh, my God, tuck in my head, roll, twist and roll.
A lot of decades ago, I was ice skating with my then-girlfriend, now-wife,
okay,
showing off by skating backwards. I hadn't ice skated.
You were skating backwards?
I hadn't ice skated in like 30 years. I'm showing off, and my skate caught on the ice. I went over one leg under my body, broke my leg in two places.
You broke your leg in two places? Oh, my goodness. Skating backwards. Oh, that was, oh, that must, oh, you were?
She married me anyway. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, a listener with us in El Paso, Texas. Hi.
Hello, Dr. Zorba and Tom, and thank you for your show. We just so much enjoy it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Our question is about acupuncture. About 3 years ago, I was having some bad pain on my left leg with sciatica. And I tried acupuncture, and after two treatments, it was gone, and it's been gone since then. I don't hear you very much talk about acupuncture. I don't think I've ever heard you say, you know, even try it. And my question is, how do you feel about acupuncture?
Well, I think acupuncture, you know, does work. There are a number of studies that show that it works, but you know, I've been disappointed with acupuncture. That's the long and the short of it. There are some people who all of a sudden, such as yourself, have had great results. The disappointment comes from a number of places. First of all, it's not covered by insurance in most states. That's my, one of my main disappointments. In other words, so you're paying $50 to $75 off often for a treatment for acupuncture, and you might get 5 treatments, you know, or 10 treatments, and it costs you, you know, $350 to $500 or $800, and you go, well, it didn't work, and I'm out $800. So that's one part of me that has disappointed me, the lack of insurance coverage. Here it is, we cover drugs that are sometimes worthless, you know, huge, expensive drugs, and we don't cover something that simple. So that's number one. Number two, I've sent people to acupuncturists, and it's very individual. So there are a couple of acupuncturists that I use in my group and in town that I've seen some results with. But because the standardization of acupuncture treatment is different, in other words, there are different schools of acupuncture, I never know exactly if somebody says, well, I'm going to try acupuncture, whether or not that provider is going to be is going to do a good job. But I think just like a massage therapy, acupuncture, and I'll put chiropractic in a totally separate realm because they do a really good job with acute back pain. I think they do a marvelous job. I think you always have to look at the practitioner. You've got to get a good one, and you've got to then see if it's going to work for you. So that's why I've often stayed away. It sounds like it did a great job for you.
I was lucky. I've been one of the lucky ones, and it's interesting the way you describe, you know, how it works, because I have known people who had sciatica and went, and it didn't work for them.
That's right. How did you find your acupuncturist? How did you determine who to go to?
I have a cousin who has known this acupuncturist for 20 years and has gone to him twice a year for allergies, and with one session in the spring and one session in the fall, he takes care of his allergies. And he had mentioned it to me several years ago, and I had forgotten it. I'm very interested in natural therapies.
Sure,
and so
sure.
I had forgotten that. And when I had the sciatica, he reminded me. He said, well, why haven't you tried acupuncture? And I said, oh, my gosh, I had totally forgotten. And I didn't want surgery, and I don't like to take big pharma medications because they have so many side effects. And so I tried it, and I was just really lucky. I'm amazed.
You had a good acupuncturist. You had a you know, you had, as you said, you found it through a personal referral. You know, a relative personal referral to do it, you know, and that person had results. And I think, you know, it's quite interesting. Allergies, we don't really have a way of treating it. We treat it with, you know, with antihistamines and sprays. Acupuncture may be a way of changing your body, and it certainly happens with your relative to do that. And sciatica, we often don't have great treatments. I mean, we have treatments that don't sit on the sciatic nerve, and then we use things from a muscular point of view, but often we overuse medications for sciatica because we don't have anything else. And it would be nice if we had an acupuncture treatment that even if it lowered the pain by 50% would make a difference.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, it's fierce.
Yeah, it can be very fierce. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. We really appreciate it.
Oh, gosh. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for listening, too.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413. Before we take a break, Zorba, let's get social and shine a light on our social media juggernaut, the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. Time for another edition of Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
You ready, Zorba?
I love it. Yes, I am.
First up, a listener, John, asks, Zorba, you mentioned Selsun Blue Shampoo as your choice for scalp problems. Which active ingredient do you prefer, as Selsun Blue has several different varieties of active ingredients?
Well, the selenium is what's basically in Selsun Blue. That is the active ingredient, and that's really what it is. Now, there's also prescription Selsun, which is stronger. It just has a larger percentage of the active ingredient. But that's the stuff that I think works, and hey, it's over-the-counter, cheap and easy and expensive. I would buy the one with the highest concentration of selenium. It's the most likely to work.
Next, Jack in Clintonville, Wisconsin, offers the following expertise. I'm a dentist, and you did a pretty good segment on tooth decay. I would add that fluoride occurs naturally in some aquifers here in Wisconsin, so a well water test is important before fluoride supplementation to avoid accidental overdosing.
Well, that's true. I mean, if you are having too much fluoride, it can stain your teeth, and that can make a difference. So, yeah, having your water tested for fluoride is something that often the counties will do at a reduced cost.
Now, Zorba, a comment from Tony in Jacksonville, Florida. On a recent show, Zorba mentioned the Big Mac. And ever since, I've been craving one. So, after more than a decade, I had one yesterday. I've been paying for it ever since.
I periodically crave a Big Mac, too. And I pay for it with cash.
I take it the Amy's isn't feeling
obviously,
well.
Obviously yeah. So. But let me tell you something. I can tolerate a Big Mac and fries without any problem. And it does make me feel good, but it does make me feel a little bloated.
And finally, Zorba, you recently posted photos of you with the Dalai Lama in India. In the photos, you were all wearing white scarves, which prompted Joyce in Springfield, Missouri, to ask about the story behind these scarves.
Well, these scarves are called katas, and they're sort of kind of a blessing, Tibetan blessing. It's the way often Tibetans are showing respect. If a scarf is put on you, it's a thank you. Kind of think of it that way. And this is when we met with the Dalai Lama to talk about a program that I've been spearheading called Zero TB in Tibetan Children. Tibetan children have a high rate of TB, and I was there with people from Johns Hopkins, Dick Chason, who's head of infectious disease, tuberculosis, and HIV research, and a couple other people, and we were being thanked and showing respect to His Holiness.
I think you've just answered her other question related to the trip. Bridget in Onalaska wanted to hear about the project you're working on in Tibet.
That's right. Well, we want to wipe out TB in Tibetan kids, and so that is our goal, that is our project, and I am sure that with a lot of work and a little bit of green energy called money, we will succeed.
Keep the Facebook love coming, or you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
A special guest chef recipe is coming up. More of your calls, of course. Quack, 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 quacking up with Dr. Zorba, too, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on your health. That number again is 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, recipe time. This week, we're in for quite a treat. Today, we have a special guest chef joining in on the fun. Chef Ronaldo Linares is the executive chef at Martino's Cuban Restaurant in Somerville, New Jersey. And he specializes in creating healthy, diabetes-friendly dishes that are a fusion of his Cuban and Colombian heritage. He's also the author of Chef Ronaldo's Sobornos de Cuba, diabetes-friendly, traditional, and nuevo Cubano cuisine. And he joins us today to share his tasty recipe for a green vegetable egg tortilla. Chef Ronaldo Linares, welcome to the show.
Hello. How are you? Thank you for bringing me on. As always, love talking to you guys out there in Wisconsin. Yeah.
Our pleasure. Let's talk about the recipe.
Well, before that, tell me a little bit about the book. How did you end up doing the book and get involved with the American Diabetes Association?
Health has always been a big part of my life. I've always been a fanatic of fitness and being healthy and all mm-hmm. that. And throughout that time, just cooking, I always, off to the side, would try to make our typical Cuban, Latino recipes on a healthier note. I kind of challenge myself, how can I make this better? So I reached out to the American Diabetes Association and let them know my plan. They were like, can you do it? I'm like, yeah, of course I could get this done. I had no clue I could. And months later, we were able to print out an amazing book that's, been selling like crazy. And the cool thing about it is it's diabetic friendly, which means that if you do have diabetes, it's perfect for you. If not, it's as good for you because it's flavorful.
Well, it's flavorful, and the issue with diabetes is that a lot of people, first of all, more and more people have diabetes, but a lot of people have pre-diabetes, and a lot of people are at risk for diabetes. So mm-hmm. finding healthy recipes that are diabetes-friendly actually is very similar to a Mediterranean-type diet, which we know is good, and that's really... Yeah. It's really kind of a nice thing. So, well, let's look at this recipe. So we picked out green vegetable egg tortilla. So we start out with two green onion stalks, finely sliced. How finely do you slice them? Like just little?
I would say about an eighth of an inch. You want them, because this is going to cook quick. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure everything's in uniform. Everything that you're cutting is similar size and shape to the others, because you want everything to cook evenly when you bite into it. You don't want something that's halfway through and one is not too cooked.
So how do you do that with the broccoli crowns, too? You end up slicing those in. How thin do you slice them?
You're right around the same, an eighth or a quarter mm-hmm. inch. I just kind of take the crowns out and just uh-huh. kind of go down and slice them up. You don't have to be perfect with it.
Half cup of cubed Roma tomatoes. That's about one tomato, or is that about a tomato or two? But a half a cup.
Yeah, about there.
Cup of spinach thinly sliced. Fresh spinach, I take that, or frozen spinach? What would you?
Fresh spinach is good. I'd rather go for the fresh spinach. If you could got it. If not, you could definitely go for the frozen one. And what I like to do is kind of bring the leaves together, kind of mm-hmm. pile them up and uh-huh. roll them up. Mm-hmm. Like old school, when you roll up the cigarettes, kind of like that. And then you just kind of go across and slice them up so you get nice little strings. You know uh-huh. what I mean?
Yes.
Kind of like
yes.
a chaffinade style. Yeah,
you do that. A half teaspoon of kosher salt, a teaspoon of garlic powder, teaspoon of oregano, quarter teaspoon of black pepper, half teaspoon of smoky paprika. Why'd you decide to use the smoky paprika versus the Hungarian paprika?
I prefer the smoking paprika because it gives mm-hmm. it a little of a sweet flavor, the smokiness of it, and it definitely blends better with the other ingredients that I'm putting in there. Mm-hmm. The Hungarian paprika is kind of one note. Mm-hmm. it's still good, but for other stuff, you know what I mean? This has a more versatile, and you get that Spaniard flavor that you're looking for in an egg in a tortilla, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's great to use. Americans do not really utilize paprika very much because the paprika I grew up with was the stuff my mother put on the top of deviled eggs. That's
no flavor.
That has no flavor, right. It has no flavor. Tom is laughing. It's kind of like a maraschino cherry on the top of ice cream.
Yeah.
You're laughing at that paprika. You know, I've never seen you laugh at a seasoning, Tom. I've never seen him after this evening.
He knows it's true. That's
he right. knows it's true. That's right. Four eggs that are whisked and a half a cup of milk. You have fat-free milk because it's a diabetic recipe, but you could, you know, fat-free or low-fat. Okay. Preheat the oven at 350 degrees. Add the green onion, broccoli, tomato, spinach, salt, garlic powder, oregano, black pepper, and paprika to a bowl. Toss the ingredients well to make sure the greens are covered with the spices. We do that first. Then preheat an oven-proof nonstick pan over medium heat. So I think you've got to pick what you're going to put in that oven. Add the veggies and you saute. How long do you saute it for?
You want to put about a medium heat. You want to saute for, like, 2 minutes. They're going to cook quick. They're going to get translucent. They're going to let you know. You're going to smell the green onions. You're going to smell the broccoli. You're going to smell it. So that will let you know, hey, I'm done. I'm good to go. Cover me with the eggs. Uh-huh. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. I like the idea. They'll tell you when they're ready, cover me with the eggs. You clearly love to cook.
I love. It's like a relationship. Like, when I'm cooking, it's like we are in a relationship, me and the food, and I want to make sure at the end of this meal, we both are getting what we want out of it. You know?
That's exactly it. So that's it. I cook. I have four kids, and we actually all love cooking. We all love cooking together because it's part of it. Now, in a medium bowl, we add eggs and milk. Whisk the eggs and milk together until combined. Add that mixture combination to the pan. Stir with a wooden spoon or a plastic spoon. Make sure the ingredients are evenly spread out. Place the pan in the middle of the rack of the preheated oven. Set the timer for 10 minutes. How do you know the dish is done?
It's gonna, it's like naturally gonna kind of like puff up a little bit, like a souffle. Mm-hmm. And the middle, you want the middle to be cooked. How do we do that? We could just get like a fork or a toothpick if you have one laying around, something pointy, and you want it to come out clean, mm-hmm. like a cake. You know, okay. you put the toothpick in, you take it out, it's clean. I'm good to go. It's done. Typically, the outsides get done quicker than the middle.
Mm-hmm. Good way to look at it. Move the pan from the oven. Then you let it sit for a couple of minutes because you want the eggs to settle. How long do you let it sit for?
Just a few minutes, 2 or 3 minutes. It's still going to be hot. It's not going to get cold or nothing like that. You want it to settle down, just like what you should do with a steak or anything that comes out of the oven. You want to let it be for a few minutes or kind of it settles down. It gets used to the atmosphere of the outside of the oven. And then you want to bite into it to get maximum flavor because that's what we're all about, flavor.
That sounds great. Well, I love it. I love the big flavors. You've got some unforgettable meals in here. I think it's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. It's Chef Ronaldo's Sub. How do you I want to make sure you pronounce it correctly. So I don't, all of my kids speak Spanish, but I do not. How do you pronounce it? Sabores?
Sabores?
Sabores de Cuba.
Cuba.
De Cuba. Yeah. But are you Cuban or are you Colombian?
No, I'm half and half. My mother is Cuban. My father's Cuban. Uh-huh. And my mother is Colombian.
Uh-huh. So which do you relate to, Cuba or Colombia? Which you grew up in Colombia, right?
Well, I grew up in Colombia, but I have more of the Cuban flavor, but definitely the Colombian in me. You know, it comes and goes. It depends. It depends. It depends what mood I'm in. it definitely depends what kind of mood I'm in, which side comes out. But mostly it's Cuban, but when it's time to get down, the Colombian comes out.
I love it. I love it. Well, it's a great cookbook. It's a wonderful cookbook.
Thank you. Yeah, it's very good. It's bilingual. People out there that it's like, oh, what's up with the Latinos? I'm like, you're taken care of. The book side. So if you were to open the book, right, on the left, it's your English, and on the right, it's your Spanish. So if you want to learn Spanish, it's a great way. The book has awesome stories at the top of the recipes about kind of my food memories, why I chose that dish. And it has a lot of different things in there. It has little tips on going to the farmer's market. If you have a gluten-free lifestyle, it has all the flowers and tips on how to use them. It's very different from a typical cookbook, and you definitely will enjoy it to whoever buys it. And if you happen to find yourself in Somerville, New Jersey, chat.
We'll stop by. That sounds great. I'll put it on my bucket list. That's what I'll do. I'll put it on my bucket list. But thanks very much. And you're right. I'm glad you pointed out the bilingual part, which is really great. And it's really important to be able to give good recipes in both English and Spanish, because Spanish is the second language of North America. Thanks for sharing this. Good luck. Good luck in your cookbook and keep cooking. Thanks.
No, definitely we'll keep cooking. You guys keep having an awesome radio show. I mean, that's what's up.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much. Appreciate the call. It. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
I'm so jealous, Zorba.
You're so jealous?
Yeah. I interview you, of course, for an hour each week.
Yeah.
But when you interview the chef, you light up. You're such a wonderful interview. You're so into this. I mean, when we do the recipe and it's your recipe, I say, a cup of this, teaspoon of that, you know, put it on the stove. Now back to the phones we go. You never want to get back to the phones because you're so excited about the guest chef's recipe.
Good for you. That is funny. Thank you, Tom.
To get a copy of today's recipe, visit our website.
At zorbapastor.org, or remember, Facebook. If you've never heard of Facebook, well, you obviously are Rip Van Winkle.
Back to the phones we go now, Zorba, at 800-462-7413, 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, a listener joins in from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. How are you today?
Fine. How can we help?
The reason for my call today is about migraine auras. I don't get the headache, but I do get the auras. There's not really a pattern to when I get them, but I'm just wondering if there's something I can be more cautious of or if I should be, how worried I should be about.
Well, tell us a bit about the auras. What do you see? What happens?
So what happens is I get a slight blurriness in my eye, mm-hmm. and then I get this kaleidoscope circling going throughout my eye, which makes it very, very difficult to see.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, most often, it starts in my right eye, and then it'll move to my left eye so that there's partial time when both eyes have this swirling kaleidoscope type of thing, which makes seeing quite a challenge.
What do you do when you're driving?
I've only had it happen once, and fortunately, I was able to pull over.
Do you know it's coming before it happens?
As I've become more accustomed to them over years of paying attention, I would say yes. Very much, but a few, maybe a moment or two ahead of time.
A moment or two ahead of time because you know it's happening. How old were you when you first got these?
I would say from the best that I can remember, at least 10 years ago.
At least 10 years ago. How old are you right now?
63.
Did you get migraines as a kid at all?
No.
When they come, how long do those swirls and kaleidoscopes last? What time are you talking about?
Anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes.
Okay, very. Are you on any blood pressure pills or anything of that?
Yes, lisinopril.
You might want to talk to your doctor about this and switch to a beta blocker, like atenolol or metoprolol, because beta blockers work very well for migraines. Lisinopril is a good blood pressure pill, but a beta blocker pill would have the benefit of lowering your blood pressure and maybe getting rid of the migraines. I'd recommend that. Or lowering the lisinopril to maybe half the dose or a quarter of the dose and adding a little beta blocker, that's another way to do it, is having a combination of a beta blocker and an ACE inhibitor. The lisinopril ACE inhibitors sometimes work for migraines, but not as well as beta blockers. So I might do that. The triggers of migraine, if you go on the web, you'll find everything triggers migraines, from elections, from elections to difficult relatives to cinnamon to coffee. To chocolate. When you look from a food point of view, there are always good foods that trigger migraines. You never see something like kale triggering a migraine or quinoa. You never hear of quinoa. You never hear of brown rice triggering a migraine or fiber in the diet, like fiber-filled foods. There are always foods that we like to eat and enjoy. I have no idea why, and frankly, I wonder whether or not that's really what it is. But a beta blocker is what I would look at, especially if you're getting more of them and they seem to be coming and they're that disturbing. I think I talked to your doc about it. Because being on another one of the prophylactic pills, you don't want to add a pill to it. You may want to change what you're on. So I hope that helps.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing that.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. We appreciate the call at 800-462-7413. And before the break, Zorba, time now for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the doc. Oh, oh, oh.
A listener named Mark in Green Bay, Wisconsin, recently left us a lengthy voicemail, and we've distilled it down a bit. He wanted to correct Zorba's statement on a recent show that President Franklin D. Roosevelt died at the age of 54. So here's a heavily edited version of the content from his voicemail. Zorba, you said at least three times that FDR died at the age of 54. Why did you say that?
Right.
Even if you were
right.
to it's glance
64.
Even if you were to glance at the Wikipedia right. page, they helpfully list his age. He was 63 and about 10 weeks, nowhere near 54. Let's see how and whether you correct this little error on the air. Can you do that? I would be shocked, but miracles never cease. I'm not sure that I'll be listening, but we'll see.
You know, it's very interesting. I don't remember saying 54. I knew he died at 64. But this is a particular listener who tends to write me letters pretty much about once a month or two correcting anything that happens.
He's going to write again because you just said 64. He says 54.
No, 64.
And 54 and, 10 weeks.
No, 63.
Oh, 63.
And 10 weeks. And you know something? That's exactly right. If you want to be absolutely specific and not approximate, always go to Wikipedia, which actually is accurate most of the time. But thank you so much for that feedback. I always welcome feedback.
And if you're a friend of this guy and he isn't listening, let him know that Zorba.
You know something? He never puts a return address on his envelope, so I can't send him a thank you note, which I would be more than pleased to do.
Did Zorba get the facts wrong on something?
I do.
Feel free to recommend his impeachment by posting on our Facebook page or sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More calls, of course, coming up. We'll be quack, quack, quacking up with Dr. Zorba, too, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, older people's use of psychiatric drugs.
Right. Well, this is quite interesting because there's been a significant increase in the use of psychiatric drugs in older Americans, 65 and older. And there's some good drugs in there and there's some bad drugs in there. But let's look at it generally. First of all, one of the things the feds did, I am the medical director of the nursing home in our town, Oregon Manor. I've been medical director for more than three decades. And a number of years ago, more than 10 years ago, the feds said, you've got to get benzodiazepines, drugs like Valium and Xanax and Ativan, off of older people. You've got to get a diagnosis made, and you've got to figure out what you're doing, and you have to get rid of the antipsychotics, such as risperidone, off of older people. But you've got to look at antidepressants. And so what we did in nursing homes all over the country was reduce the antipsychotics, you know, drugs, as I said, that are antipsychotic, reduce the use of benzodiazepines, which are can be very difficult if they're with chronic opioids, and increase the use of antidepressants. And so all of these psychiatric drugs are not really in the same class.
Well, what happens to people who are using them?
Well, the problem is when people get older, a lot of people become more depressed. They become more anxious. They become more upset. And some drugs can be useful and have been shown to improve quality of life, antidepressants being one of them. And other drugs have been shown to be more detrimental, antipsychotics and tranquilizers being the two basic classes. But all in all, we're using more psychiatric psychiatric drugs as we're getting older, and more so in rural areas. And the question is this polypharmacy worthwhile or not worthwhile? That's in the discussion.
Well, what are the okay drugs for older people?
Well, I think antidepressants, the SSRIs such as Zoloft, Paxil, Prozac, Lexapro, and Celexa, the five basic ones in that class and category. I think they're generally good for older people. As long as you've got a diagnosis of depression, in other words, you measure it through the PHQ-9, it's called, which is a verified way. I think antipsychotic drugs like risperidol have to be used very, very gingerly because they can be detrimental. And I think benzodiazepines, the drugs in that class, such as Xanax, have to be used very, very cautiously.
This is really a doctor problem.
What is a doctor problem? Well, it's not just a doctor problem.
They prescribe
problem.
These.
Well, we doctors do prescribe them, but that's because patients come in for that. So I think the issue here with all these drugs are make a diagnosis. Physicians should look at that, document what the drugs are for, and then determine what's the lowest dose that works and is the drug necessary, and should they have a drug holiday to see if they really need the drug continuing.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi. I have a situation I think is fairly common in the world from talking to friends. I have to wake up fairly early to urinate, and I can get 4 or 5 hours of sleep in, but I'm almost 60 and seems to be slowly getting a little bit worse. It doesn't affect my sleep so much, but my question has to do with saw palmetto and some of these other over-the-counter nutritional things are advertised a lot, but I haven't been able to see much good research on how effective they are. When I've used them myself, I really can't tell that much difference. I'm fortunate I've got some older siblings that are kind of my guinea pigs on aging. And they say, no, it's normal. They all have it. One of my older brothers has tried all of them, including the ones they advertise on TV and radio, that are supposedly a concentrate form of salt palmetto's active ingredient. I don't seem to get any effect from it. Mm-hmm. When I ask the person at the health food chain store, mm-hmm. something like, does it really work? Their comments are something like, well, I don't know, but we sell a lot of it. Which, doesn't indicate a lot.
No, it doesn't indicate. And at $29.95 a month or more, you're talking about the fact that you might be spending $350, you might be spending $500 a year on this stuff.
Right. Well, I'm fortunate to have a older, wise physician that I've known for years. And when I asked him about it, he basically said, well, not a lot you can do about it. Everyone has this. And I asked him about a prescription, and he said he's against it for several reasons. And he was referring to something like Flomax, which is tamsulosin. Mm-hmm. And the reasons he gave was that, one, that's the kind of drug you start it, you usually don't go off of it. Two, it does have significant side effects. And three, I'm at my age and I take no real prescription drugs to speak of. He thinks I should just keep going and kind of grin and bear it and kind of be like, farmers get up for the crack of dawn. I think there's more than one reason for that. But so basically, does salt palmetto have any kind of research that really works?
Yeah.
And two, do you agree with my position?
Yeah, okay. So first of all, salt palmetto, very disappointing. Double-blind, placebo-controlled studies have shown it does not work. Now, does that stop it from being a $250 million, a $500 million a year drug that guys take? Not at all. And if you notice, they say to maintain prostate health, because that's what the FDA allows them to say. They can't say, we'll work to decrease, they can't say that it actually is going to decrease the swelling or change the swelling to the prostate or something like that. They can say to maintain health because they're allowed to do that, and it's good. But it's a sham. Doesn't work. Double-blind studies have shown it's worthless. I'm against it. At first, I thought it might be useful. Now, a number of people will write me all the time and say, wait a minute, I took sal palmetto and it really worked for me. Okay, worked for you, doesn't work for other people. So try it, see if it works like you did. Doesn't work, don't spend your money, don't waste it. Now, next step, what do you do if you're getting up once during the night? Well, one thing you do is you limit the amount of drinking that you do after like 5 or 6 o'clock. So do you drink a lot of fluid after like 5 or 6 in the evening? Do you sit down and sip on water or imbibe on something at night?
I try not to after advice of one of my older brothers.
How many older brothers do you have, by the way?
I have 4.
You have 4 older brothers.
So yeah,
are you the baby? Are you the baby in the family?
No. No, actually, I came from a Catholic family of 12 kids.
Of 12?
I'm somewhere towards the trailing edge. It's also, I found out from talking to my sister, that it's a female problem, too.
It is, but they have a different problem. They do not have a prostate, right? So it is different.
Right.
So first step is limit the amount of fluid. That's one of the things to do. If you're getting up once during the night to urinate once and you go back to sleep, I generally tell guys, if you can get back to sleep, there is no reason to take a drug. But if you're getting up 2 or 3 times a night, Flomax is a very good drug, very well tolerated, works for a lot of guys. Now, Proscar, another drug, finasteride, actually shrinks the prostate. You have to take it for 6 months to a year before it has an effect. And that drug, if you stop taking, the prostate then swells up again. You know, so that's kind of a different drug. And for some people, they go, well, you know, I'm getting up 3 or 4 times during the night. That's usually the number once it gets to 3 or 4. And they will either go on a combination of both drugs or they'll get a surgical procedure. But at this point, I wouldn't take anything. And you may not ever need to take something. Some people progress. A lot of guys progress. They go up 3 or 4 times a night, and then they get treatment. But a lot of guys just kind of hang out there. And besides, you're a young guy. You're only, 60.
Right. Well, I've also been reminded that, hey, just bear with it, because in another 10 to 20 years, this will fall way down your list of things that are
maladies. Obviously, yeah, those older siblings are telling you what you have in store.
that's true. I'd also like to say that the thing I like most about your show is you throw in humor into what's normally a very serious topic, and I like how your co-host kind of like keeps you in check.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And Tom, thanks you.
Thank you very much for the call.
Okay. Keep going.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Doc. Bye.
800. Actually, I try to keep the humor out of the show.
But that's right.
Yes, you do. It comes back in somehow.
Yes, you do.
Zorba now, time for another dive into the murky waters of medical quackery. It's time again for Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quack it up with Dr. Zorba.
And Zorba, I said murky waters, but this time I could have said smoky past. Let's talk about asthma cigarettes,
which were very big. I've got to read you a couple of advertisements. This is a woman called, this cure asthma with cigarettes. Joy Cigarettes for immediate relief of asthma, wheezing, and winter cough with a little perseverance will effect a permanent cure. I love this. Universally recommended by the most eminent physicians and medical authors. Agreeable to use, certain in their effects, and harmless in their action. They may be safely smoked by ladies and children. And here's another one.
Goodness.
Dr. Batty's Asthma Cigarettes for Your Health for the temporary relief of paroxysms of asthma effectively treats asthma, hay fever, foul breath. I love that one. All diseases of the throat, head colds, canker sores, not recommended for children under 6.
Well, what's in these? What was in these cigarettes?
Imagine your 6-year-old actually smoking this cigarette.
Was it tobacco?
Well, it wasn't tobacco. It was actually, one of the issues was the theory was that cold was actually bad for the lungs. Heat was actually good for the lungs.
Yeah.
And these cigarettes contained a variety of deadly nightshade. Deadly nightshade, because if you, is the name of a family, a botanical family, and it's called nightshade. I call it deadly nightshade because in large amounts it was actually deadly to some people. And nightshade was used, it's used in Ayurvedic medicine, which is a traditional Indian medicine. It was used in a variety of folk medicines in large amounts. It caused dilated pupils and a rapid heart rate, nausea, confusion, dry mouth. It was used actually for hallucinations, and not for hallucinations. It caused hallucinations. But in small amounts, it would actually take the bronchial tubes and increase their size. Actually, people could breathe a little bit better. The problem was it actually was detrimental to the lungs. And people then took these asthma cigarettes and said, gee, if the asthma cigarettes work, I bet smoke will work, and started smoking cigarettes for their asthma. And at one point in Great Britain, first of all, about 80% of the men smoked. And if you were an asthmatic, you'd go in to a doctor and say, well, you ought to take up smoking. It'll warm up your lungs. It'll make you feel better. And obviously, these asthma cigarettes were quack, quack, quackery. And we don't recommend those today.
Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to this segment? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Before we head out, Zorba, let's check in with your favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. The following email comes to us from a listener named David, who listens to the show on KGOU in Norman, Oklahoma. He writes, "Dear Dr. Pastor, in the spirit of the Grammar Police, I ask you to indulge my adoption of the role of Myth Police in regards to a comment you made on a recent show. You said, before Al Gore invented the internet, bringing up a myth that won't die. Al Gore never said, I invented the internet."
I know he never said that. But it's still ascribed to him. So thank you very much. You know, you talk about it enough, it develops. I mean, yeah, it's a sociological maxim. If you say it long enough, people begin to believe it's true. And I guess you're right. He really didn't invent the internet. But I knew that he didn't invent the internet.
Did Zorba myth something? We're always game to hear about it. Just post it to Facebook or send it to us in an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
For more Zorba Pastor on Your Health, including episodes, recipes, and tips mentioned on the program, visit ZorbaPastor.org. This year, we're celebrating the show's 25th anniversary, and we want to hear from you. How has Zorba helped you out? What have you learned from the show over the years? Leave us a message at 800-462-7413.